asked J.R. Tate from Iowa State University to visit with us today about some of the research that him and Dr. Jim Reese have done relative to the possibilities for genetic selection for beef that's more healthy for the consumer. So, JR, thank you very much.
All right. Thanks, Bill. Appreciate the invitation to come here and visit with you today. Dr. Reese is actually in the Netherlands working in a symposium on genetics of health of animals. So at Iowa State, we're working on both the health of the cattle as well as the health of the products that they're working on or that are produced from animals. So we kind of have health and beef in a couple of different projects and a couple of different aspects. And I'm going to visit with you today about the healthfulness of beef and what the opportunities may be for selection to make that product more healthful. And as a result of that, Dr. Reese normally gives this kind of a talk and has shared some of his slides with me. So hopefully we'll be able to go through that and give you some insights. Many of you may have seen in Beef Magazine last month talking about what's the policy environment we're working in from a beef industry perspective. It went and evaluated what happened back in the 1970s in terms of dietary recommendations for saturated fat intakes and those kinds of things, and what that did for beef demand in the ensuing years. It really turned the beef demand from a consumer standpoint into a downward trend, and we're just now trying to recover from that. So we're going through some new transitions for nutritional recommendations from the government, and that may impact somewhat what the consumers perceive as the healthfulness of beef and where it fits into their dietary plans on a day-to-day basis. We're also in a situation where products are trying to differentiate themselves and give themselves a niche that they have some appeal for consumers. And so as an example of this, some products are incorporating like an American Health Association logo, trying to promote themselves as a heart-healthy product. Other kinds of products like margarine, promoting no saturated fats, no trans fats. Those are all important marketing schemes that these products are trying to implement, as well as incorporation of omega-3 fatty acids in some of the products, making sure that those are promoted as more healthful kinds of products, and consumers would maybe want to do that. And there may even be situations where they've implemented a specific production system. Maybe they're feeding vitamin E, and this is an example of America's, of Eggland's Best. They have promotion of vitamin E levels, omega-3, saturated fat compared to regular eggs. Certain product specifications that they're anticipating are going to increase demand from specific consumers. So what we're going to visit about today is specifically fatty acid profiles of beef and what that has in terms of impacts on implications for the healthfulness of the lipids within the beef that we're talking or producing. And it's important to keep in mind that it's been demonstrated in the past that fatty acid concentrations are influenced by the nutrition that the animals are given, but there are also breed effects. So kind of where we got started into this was, if there are breed effects, are there variations within a breed that we can use to identify some of those differences as well? So what we have done is we had collected beef samples from packing plants, processed those samples to into a ground product, and then we were able to separate the phospholipids associated with the cell walls from the triacylglycerides that are within the marbling fraction, or the portion of the beef that, or the marbling that you see, and then run those through a gas chromatograph that gives us the different distributions of fatty acids and what are those peaks, and what fatty acids represent what proportion of the lipid from those different fractions. And then we were interested in running a genetic evaluation on those and determining if there is genetic control over that, with the ultimate goal being to hopefully identify some sort of a tool that producers would be able to use and implement in order to produce beef that would have a more healthful impact or be more healthful for consumers. Just to kind of go through what we have from a fatty acid standpoint in terms of what are available or what fatty acids we find in beef, we have 14-0, which the 14 represents the number of carbon chains, and the 0 means that there are no unsaturated bonds in there, so this is a saturated fatty acid. And we can move from 14-0 either into unsaturating it with becoming a 14-1 or transitioning it into a 16-0. And then we can also continue that on to 18-0 and unsaturation across any of those different fatty acids. Back in 1991, Albright and Southgate proposed an atherogenic index, and this looks at how detrimental is a particular lipid for health of humans. And you'll notice in this 14-0 is given a much higher weight, 4 times as detrimental to health as either of the 12-0 or the 16-0 saturated fatty acids. And that is expressed as a ratio over all of the monounsaturated fats, all of the 14-1, 16-1, any of the whatever carbon colon 1 fatty acids, as well as the polyunsaturated fatty acids, 18-2, any of those that have more than one unsaturation bond. But in order to, if you think about this, a higher number is more detrimental to health. So what we decided to do was also look at expressing this as a health-promoting index, where we just inverted the numerator and the denominator. Still have the detrimental effect of 14-0 represented here, but the unsaturated fatty acids are in the top. In this case, the higher numbers are more favorable for health. And just wanted to go through and show what kind of a health-promoting index is represented in the lipids coming from the phospholipid portion of the beef versus the triacylglyceride. In general, the triacylglycerides are more detrimental than the phospholipids. But we are going to be evaluating and talking today about the composite, the combination of both of those, and how what we think are options for selection. Just to give you some standpoints from where health-promoting index of different items or different food products are. Soy oil would be considered a very healthy kind of an oil or lipid and has a health-promoting index of 7.7. Beef phospholipid layer fraction in general has about a 3 for health-promoting index. Also, general composite of beef has a health-promoting index of maybe about 1.5. If we look at just the triacylglycerides, health-promoting index is about 1.3. We can also evaluate or make comparisons to milk fats, which are generally considered to be less healthful than beef fats. So at least we have some advantages there in terms of general healthfulness of beef fatty acids compared to milk fats and some of those kinds of things. Just to show some of the variation that we get in that most detrimental fatty acid, the 14-0, here we have expressed the percentage of 14-0 and the number of samples represented in each of those different variations or different quantiles of percentage 14-0. These samples are all collected from Iowa State cattle that we've collected fatty acid profile information on. We've also had some interest in comparing cattle or beef, which has an average 14-0 concentration of about 3%, to chicken, which has average concentration of about 1%. And if we think about salmon, which some people consider to be a relatively healthy kind of protein product, it actually has a very similar 14-O concentration. It just has more of the very polyunsaturated fatty acids in that its lipid profile as well. So when we think about beef, we have some comparisons that were somewhat similar to salmon, a little bit more detrimental with the 14-O concentration than chicken. In terms of another concentration or another thing that influences the health of beef that is very well promoted, beef has high concentrations of iron. But we also received some samples from the U.S. Meat Animal Research Center where we found that there is quite a bit of variation in that iron concentration of beef as well. If we look at what the iron, milligrams of iron concentration is within a quarter pound hamburger, we can see that there are some beef samples, not very many probably, but some that would meet the male human dietary requirement for iron with just one quarter pound hamburger. Vast majority of them, it would take two or maybe three, but we would be able to, there are samples that would be able to meet those requirements. We think, look at the female's requirement, it's about 16 milligrams, about twice as much as males. There wouldn't be very many beef samples that a quarter pound hamburger would be able to meet that requirement, but yet we still are able to evaluate what kinds of differences are in place. If we look at where beef falls in that scale, roughly about 4 milligrams, comparing that to chicken, chicken's average would be down around 2%. So we definitely have an advantage over chicken in general in concentration of iron. If we think about salmon, it's clear down here, down around 1%. So it gives you another representation of where beef falls in the dietary expectations of meeting the dietary guidelines of people. In terms of analysis, I'm going to visit with you about some heritabilities of fatty acids from cattle that we did at Iowa State University that were Angus sired. And we're going to visit about 7 specific fatty acids today. Iowa State Animal Industry Report on Iowa State Beef Center website has full report of about 20 fatty acids, what we calculated, the genetic genetic heritabilities on. I'm just highlighting a few of them for this talk. This data we collected from 2001 through 2004 across essentially 3 projects we had going at Iowa State University. We had our Angus selection project where we were selecting cattle for increased intramuscular fat or increased ribeye area, and that was a purebred population. We also had a test herd population at another research farm where we were using the bulls we were selecting from that research project on commercial crossbred cows and then running them through feedlot demonstration projects. And then the Iowa Beef Center had a tenderness demonstration project where they invited producers to participate in evaluating tenderness of samples. So that's kind of the 3 data sources that these samples were coming from across that time period. What we had or wound up with was 916 samples from Angus sired bulls and steers within those projects. This represented 87 sires having anywhere from 1 to 41 progeny each. They were all run through calf fed management on corn-based finishing rations. So that kind of gives you some background about where we got these samples. Again, we went in to the packing plants, collected rib samples, removed the external connective tissue, and evaluated the fatty acids by gas chromatography. And this just gives us some of the means, standard deviations, minimums, and maximums for these 7 fatty acids that we have here. Important things to note probably are that 14-1 had very low concentration relative to everything else that we're talking about here today. 16-0 had about a quarter of the lipid was represented as 16-0, and the highest one was 18-1. But also, the 18-1 had the most variation in the amount of it, ranging anywhere from 23% to 54%. So that gives us a little background on what kinds of fatty acids we had in the beef that we were working with. Ran this analysis with MTDF-REML. Because we had that population of crossbred cows, we only used the sire model, and were able to account for that. And we used the contemporary group definition, utilizing the herd of origin for those cattle in the tenderness project demonstration, as well as the sex of the animals, bulls or steers, if they were involved in a feedlot management treatment, and then the harvest date that those animals were specifically collected on. Initially, we'll report some heritabilities that were based on single trait analysis, and then more recently we've run some two trait analyses, and I'll show a few genetic correlations on that. But in terms of the single trait analysis, we evaluated it with two kinds of models. One where we had the contemporary group only, and then a second model where we thought the proportion of triacyl glycerides, the amount of lipid within that sample, may affect whether we have a more healthful or a less healthful product, or what the concentrations would be. So we used lipid as a covariate in the second analysis as well. And again, since this was just sire, was all we were evaluating in this analysis. So the first model was the harvest contemporary group only as our fixed effect. And the interesting thing here is the most detrimental fatty acid for human health showed a heritability of 0.49, which shows us that there is going to be potentially a lot of opportunity to make selection progress for more healthful beef by reducing the 14-0. Among these seven fatty acids, the lowest heritability estimate we got was the 14-1. Remember, that was the lowest concentration in general within the beef sample anyway. As we think about the opportunity to make longer chain fatty acids, the 16-0 or the 16-1, they both have heritabilities over 0.4. The 18-0, 0.2 for heritability. 18-1, that was our highest level of fatty acid, had a heritability of 0.38. And 18-2 had a 23 for the heritability. As we went ahead and added the percent of lipid as a covariate to those models, some of them increased, like 14-0, but some of them decreased a little bit as well. In general, they didn't change very much. 0.01, 0.02 difference by adding percent lipid into the fixed effects model, except for 18.2, it had the biggest drop-off of 0.11 or 0.12 when we added the percent lipid as a covariate into the model. So just to kind of reiterate, generally we saw very little change in the heritability estimates when we had lipid level as a covariate. The short-chain saturated fatty acids appear to be quite heritable, 0.49 for the 14-0, 0.43 for the 16-0. Those are the ones that, if we get rid of those, we'll be making more healthful beef. Monounsaturated fatty acids, they're also showing quite a bit of heritability, 0.49 for the 16-1, 18-1, 0.38. So there's some opportunities to make less saturated fats, it certainly would appear. Just to kind of give you some ideas on what the genetic correlations are between some of our typical traits that we're making selection on, I've included five fatty acids and the genetic correlations between hot carcass weight, 12th rib fat thickness, ribeye area, marbling score, and Warner-Bratzler shear. In this table, any of the genetic correlations that were within 0.2, plus or minus, I've shaded off in gray. The favorable genetic correlations are in black, and the antagonistic genetic correlations I've listed here in red. So probably the first fatty acid for us to be thinking about making selection on would be 14-0, because that's the most detrimental to health. So we would have a tendency to want to decrease the level of 14-0. By doing that, we would go ahead and be selecting for increased hot carcass weight. We would be selecting for decreased 12th rib fat thickness when we're decreasing the 14-0. Ribeye area, not much different, not much, a very strong genetic correlation. Marbling has a positive genetic correlation with the 14O of 0.32, so that would be something that we would be having to fight against to be able to find animals that increase marbling but decrease 14O concentration, but certainly appears that we would be able to potentially find those kinds of animals. And then Warner Bressler shear, we would be decreasing the Warner Bressler shear as we decrease the 14O. So that's another favorable genetic correlation in this data set at this point anyway. So that kind of gives us an idea of what kinds of genetic correlations we might be looking at. Certainly would appear that with heritabilities of around 0.4 to 0.5, opportunities exist for us to be able to select for fatty acid composition. The genetic correlations, looks like we should be able to work within those and still make selection for other economically important traits. The thing that we don't have a very good handle on at this point is what's the fatty acid relationships to consumer acceptability. If we do a consumer taste panel study rather than Warner Bressler shear, is that different fatty acid profile going to be acceptable to consumers, or are there going to be adverse effects by changing the fatty acid profiles in terms of consumer acceptability? Which kind of leads us into this plan that we have for going forward from this point under the National Beef Cattle Evaluation Consortium. We're kind of working on developing a project where we would go through and try and work to make new selection or new progress on healthfulness of beef. To this point, we have kind of worked on this path right here, where we've had a beef cattle population, we've collected samples, we've evaluated those for nutrient content, and then ran a genetic evaluation. We even had tenderness evaluation on those, but not taste panel. And then we would be looking towards potential of creating EPDs or maybe DNA markers to help for selection or management of those animals. Another aspect of this plan, though, is that we would also keep some of these strip loins in archive and be able to discover new nutrients that may be involved or may have different variation of concentrations within these cattle, and then also implement potentially human and animal genetic or model nutritional trials to see if specific fatty acids or specific nutrients have interactions or new concerns or new benefits to humans or animals through nutritional trials as well. So that's kind of a general idea of where we would like to go forward from this. With that, I'd like to acknowledge the Iowa State Center for Designing Foods to Improve Nutrition and the Burroughs Endowment, which both contributed to funding for the fatty acid analysis, National Cattlemen's Beef Association, U.S. Meat Animal Research Center, both had had contributed samples or funding to help evaluate some of this stuff as well. And then other investigators at Iowa State would include Don Bites, Travis Knight, Xu Zhang, and Matt Schneider.
Bill asked me to look over things. He had a commitment in another committee. Any questions for JR? John?
JR, the correlation slide.
Yes.
In the previous slide, those were proportions. Is that still proportion here in the 14O concentration?
These are still percent of the lipids. And we have run genetic analysis as percent of lipid, but also as milligrams per gram of beef, which would take into account what the lipid concentration was. But I've only run genetic correlations on the lipid percents, so I put everything on the same scale on the heritability estimates as well. If you go into the Iowa State Beef Research Report, I've reported heritabilities for both percent of lipid for the different fatty acids as well as milligrams per gram of beef, which takes into account the lipid percent within the beef.
Well, I'm having a little trouble understanding then. If it was to get math, then obviously the higher the marbling, the more the 14 mil just So what this is saying is that as we increase marbling within that set that we're adding, it's even a higher concentration of 14-mill. I guess I don't understand that obviously.
Well, kind of what I've envisioned as the path that we're planning to take potentially with the breeding project, if we choose to select for this, is we're going to say we don't want to decrease the intramuscular fat, but we want to make a change in the 14-0 and use two different selection weightings on those two independent traits rather than trying to express it as strictly the fatty acid concentration in the beef, which takes into account what the lipid concentration was. Part of the reason for that is because when we were evaluating the milligrams per gram of beef, if I had just the Harvest Contemporary group as the fixed effect, it had a lower heritability, but when we added the percent of lipid as a covariate, then the heritabilities came up very similar to what we have for heritabilities here with the concentration within the lipid, for example 14-0, which is the most significant fatty acid. But there's certainly some opportunities to think about which of these is the right path that we take in terms of a selection path to make more healthful beef that's still going to have an acceptable level of intramuscular fat.
David?
It's just following on from that. So what you're trying to do is change the fatty acid composition within a given amount of lipid. So to me, a critical piece of information is we need a correlation between each of those fatty acids. If you look at that, can you change them, or are they all 0.9? If you drop one, you drop them all.
There are some of them that are very high, like 14-0 and 14-1, the correlation is essentially 1. Some of the others are lower, and certainly looks like we would be able to make differential selection for them.
There are your plans moving forward, taking additional samples of populations. Can you give us an idea of the scope and size of that in your opinion?
At this point, we've kind of coordinated to work on collecting about 2,000 head of cattle that would be fed out and be able to collect phenotypes for fatty acid profiles over the next couple of years. And in order to do that, we have a plan in place to make multiple sire matings and then do genetic testing to verify the sires and then go through and validate that the samples were also from those same animals, kind of along the concept of the Carcass Merit Project in terms of validating sire identity throughout the sample collection process and such.
What's the cost of running these fatty acid
profiles? The fatty acid profiles is about $200 a sample to get that collected. Just the reagents and stuff like that is certainly less, but by the time we figure labor and wear and tear on the equipment and stuff like that, it gets up to about $200 a sample to collect. And that's probably also doing some iron concentrations and a few of the other mineral concentrations beyond just the fatty acid, so we can get a better handle on overall health nutrient concentration within those beef. There is certainly a potential that there could be differences in the genetic expression, but I think at this point, certainly we would expect differences in mean levels of concentrations of those fatty acids. If there's a genotype by environmental interaction, we don't have any way of knowing that at this point.
Other questions?
For this, we were taking about a quarter inch facing of sample to be able to do that. Actually, we were also doing the Warner Brasler tenderness at this time, so we were taking one rib and making the steak for Warner Brasler, and then the remainder was used for the fatty acid composition work.
Other questions for JR? One observation I might make is currently the project is titled Investigating Opportunities Available in Genetic Selection for Healthy Beef. The question I'd have for this group and for you, JR, is does that imply that the beef of today is unhealthy and might there be a better title for the outside observer?
Well, I kind of was thinking about that as lead-in information. We talked about healthfulness of beef and the consumer's perception potentially versus the producer's perception. And I don't know that we have a problem today, but certainly there could be the perception that there's a problem, and I think that there may be an opportunity to create a production system that says this is going to be more healthy than the typical production system, just like grass-fed beef kind of is filling that kind of a niche at this point, too. So there certainly could be a different name for it than that that may be more appealing to consumers and outside observers, though.
Other questions? Thank you, JR. Really appreciate your efforts. And with that, I think we stand adjourned. Thanks, everybody, for your attendance. Well done, sir.
Thanks.
That's great.
Yeah, I don't know.
Maybe I'm just thinking.
I didn't give Bill an exact.